Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It's a three-year open ocean journey from South America to the northern coast of North America, then across the open seas to the coast of Africa, then back again across the Atlantic to mate, then lay eggs, and begin again this cycle. It's an ancient wonder, millions of years in the making, just one of the grand stories of our world. But will it too disappear into the mists of history? We explore more the story of the leatherback turtles when your voice of the earth returns here on the Wildside News. And now, the story of the leatherback turtles continues.
Well, now let's talk about really your work in terms of trying to utilize your research to help these animals survive, because obviously there's a series of dangers that are put upon them. Why don't you outline some of the main threats to these animals?
Okay, there is a long history of egg consumption in Latin America. These eggs of marine turtles in general are supposed to have aphrodisiac properties and are therefore consumed very widely, both in the Pacific and in the Atlantic coast. That has meant that for many, many years we did not see any hatchlings of leatherbacks going into the water and eventually growing to become adults. So we have a problem right there already. The adults that we have are just limited in number, and there is not a big, large number of juveniles growing. So every egg counts today for the leatherbacks. But the other big pressure, and which is acknowledged as the most important threat to marine turtles worldwide, is the mortality as incidental catch in hooks and nets of the artisanal and industrial fisheries. And it is this threat, which we call bycatch, the one that we hope to address through our efforts here in the Atlantic Ocean. When we learn about the tracks of the turtles as they migrate, we will be able, hopefully, to identify hotspots of interactions between turtles and fisheries, and eventually be able to design when and where there should be closures for fisheries to permit the passing of the turtles towards their foraging grounds or the arrival of turtles towards the nesting grounds. So that's one definite way of mitigating the threat of bycatch. But then there are other ways. There's a fascinating hook that has been recently designed called a circle hook. The circle hook has the nice property that it catches fish, but it does not catch as many turtles as the classical J-shaped hook that is used worldwide in the longline industry. And we are moving forward through a voluntary adoption program for circle hooks with the longline industry in various countries in Latin America. And I think there is a very promising avenue here to reduce the pressure of mortality as incidental bycatch for the leatherbacks.
Mm-hmm. Now, this brings us actually to a very interesting aspect of your work right now, and that is the fact that your people who have access to the Internet are now able to literally watch the movement, that is to say the migration of these animals from their breeding grounds out into wherever they head, some heading north, some into the eastern coast of the United States, some into open seas. And it's a fascinating thing to watch, because you have identified, or actually put tracking devices on 11 different leatherbacks, females, and they are very unique in terms of their personal migratory patterns. That's just so interesting.
Yes, we are very, very excited about this opportunity, and in fact, the credit for this is the willingness of scientists and conservation groups across the Atlantic Basin to collaborate with World Wildlife Fund on this endeavor, and to provide the data so that we can portray it online for everyone to see. So we're starting to see interesting patterns, yes. Just as you say, there are many individual decisions that these animals take. The ones that left Panama, for example, went in various directions. One went between Cuba and the Dominican Republic, whereas others decided to go north, east of Haiti and between Puerto Rico and the Antilles Islands. Another one decided to go west of Cuba, just north of the Yucatan Peninsula, into the Gulf of Mexico. And this is the turtle called Fermina, who was very close to New Orleans at the time of the hurricane, Romin Romana, another turtle from Panama, ended up as well very close to New Orleans as we speak. And we have a turtle that we call Marina. This is the single turtle that was fitted with a transmitter offshore Uruguay. And she again is revealing interesting associations with the underwater ocean ridges that are located in the area. So when you zoom into the track of Marina, you will start to see that there is an association of her movements with some of the very nutrient-rich waters that these seamounts generate underwater. So, yeah, we're very excited, in particular because we have another team of scientists in Gabon who will be deploying transmitters the end of this year from nesting females there, and we wish to see where these turtles go, and we have, of course, already an idea and suspect that they will go to feed in the waters of Argentina and Uruguay mainly. Cold waters, very nutrient-rich, which again illustrates the importance of conservation efforts in Gabon, in Africa, being complemented by an equivalent reduction of bycatch mortality in Latin American shores.
Part of the story as well is that not all the turtles survive, and that's been demonstrated already in your project through the satellite transmissions.
We have a sad story indeed. The turtle Kawana was fitted with a transmitter in Suriname and shortly after died in what we suspect must have been a gillnet. The turtle's records show that she was held underwater for about 9 hours on her final dive. And that tends to suggest that she definitely got entangled in one of the gillnets that is one of the many thousands of gillnets that we see relatively close to the shore in the Guyanese waters. So this turtle, and we finally recovered the body and the transmitter, which we will be able to fit to another turtle on another occasion, is revealing exactly what this project is about. This is the main threat to turtles, the nets, the hooks in the water. They are not intended to catch turtles. It is a pain for the fishermen when they have a turtle this size in their gear. The gear tends to get destroyed. No one really wants to catch these turtles. So when we look for solutions to the problem of bycatch, we are looking for a solution not just for the turtles, but also for the fishermen. So we tend to see that there is great buy-in on the sides of the fishermen to look for these alternatives, as long as we provide alternative gears or alternative sources of income for the time when fishing in front of a nesting site is not the thing that we wish to see happen.
That's an amazing story. Now, in terms of the bycatch, when a boat picks up a turtle, what do they do?
It very much depends on the gear that the boat has, but when we're talking large fishing vessels with long lines, a long line is basically long, when I say long, 70 kilometers up to 100 kilometers long line held on the water surface with buoys, and then another series of lines with hooks hanging down along this incredible distance, maybe something in the order of 10,000 hooks for the big industrial longliners. When we're talking a long line, and the long line is being pulled on the boat, and the catch is being taken, when there is a turtle, generally the first thing to do is to cut the line and let the turtle go, if she's still alive, with the hook in her mouth or in the esophagus, in the throat. That can be a lethal injury for the turtle, and she will eventually die. That's the usual thing. But with this new approach, circle hooks, we train also the fishing crews how to handle the turtles and provide gear such as nets, large nets that you can use to scoop the turtle out of the water and put her on board of the vessel, and then resuscitation techniques, dehooking techniques, just to make sure that before the turtle is released, she is already in relatively good shape. And that is also reducing a considerable proportion of the mortality associated to bycatch.
What estimates are there about the mortality rate for caught turtles?
It is a very complicated question indeed. But what we have is a global estimate of 50,000 leatherbacks being caught every year in the longline industries of the world. Not all of them die, and that's the number that, as I say, is complicated to obtain. But anything in the order between 10 and 20% is probably realistic to assume that will die, because the turtles drown if they have been held underwater for quite some time. So we're talking here a very serious problem. In fact, the large decline of the Eastern Pacific leatherbacks is attributed to extreme high bycatch in longlines and gillnets in northern Chile and offshore Peru, which is very distant from the place where we actually record the decline, which are the nesting beaches in Mexico and Costa Rica. So the pressure is there. It is acknowledged as to be the main threat to marine turtles worldwide, and we think it needs to be addressed by governments and industry alike.
I noticed, is it Aitkana, A-I-T-K-A-N-A, one of the turtles, that apparently seems to be heading out into open waters. That, to me, is a fascinating thing, the idea that this turtle can just have free range of the Atlantic. To me, that's romantic, and I think when people begin to really sense the life of these animals, and also the way in which they individually determine where to go, that's a very powerful image to me.
Yes, thank you. I see it that way as well. This turtle, Aitkanthi, may eventually reach the west coast of Africa. And here she will be facing serious challenges from the longline fleets and the gill nets. So we hope that Aitkanthi may be able to return to French Guiana to nest 2.5 years after. But it was amazing how fast she crossed the Atlantic. Mm. Now she has covered nearly 4,000 kilometers in a month and a half at the most. So it is tremendous the distance that these animals can develop when they ride the right sea currents and when they make the right choices, which is what these turtles have evolved to do.
Now, do they actually feed while they're traveling?
Not much, really, but until they get to the abundant feeding grounds, zones of upwelling associated to ocean ridges or convergence zones where cold water meets warm water, areas like that. So usually they will just travel until they get to these feeding grounds.
Let's talk about the males a little bit, too, and maybe we don't have as much research, but are they as well migratory?
The males have exactly the same nutritional needs as the females. They have to go back to the cold, temperate waters where jellyfish are abundant to spend the remainder of the year. And then they do come back to the tropics probably at about the same time as the females do. But they need to have all the fat stored that will enable them to do these amazing migrations to the warm waters of the tropics, which are much less plentiful in terms of jellyfish. So during the nesting time and the mating time, the males and the females probably do not feed a great deal.
Let's also talk about where people can go to follow this emerging story that will go on for years now.
We published a report last year illustrating the economic value of marine turtles alive in various places of the world, and the ecotourism industry is definitely adding great value to turtles in communities that have decided to conserve them and to use them as a tourist attraction, such as the case, for example, in Costa Rica, in Tortuguero. That's a very well-known place to go and see turtles. That's on the Caribbean side of Costa Rica, and you can see leatherbacks in the first half of the year in the Tortuguero area. Of course, in French Guiana and in Suriname, there is it's one of the most important nesting sites in the whole Atlantic Ocean for leatherbacks. People can visit the nesting sites and be guided and shown these amazing reptiles. Then on the Pacific side, Playa Grande in Costa Rica is again one of the places where people can try to see the leatherback turtles, but I must say, with the decline that this population has undergone, when you get to the nesting site, your chances of actually seeing the leatherback turtle are small. And this illustrates how a community that lives from ecotourism and uses the turtle as the main tourist attraction can be affected in its livelihood by the decline of this species. So who bears the responsibility and the liability for this community whose livelihood is endangered if the turtle disappears? Is it going to be the fishing industry? Is it going to be the nations where most of the bycatch is happening? We have great challenges here also in international policy work. As you can see, as soon as we start to talk, livelihoods depend on the existence of turtles in some places.
Yes. Now, your work is being overseen by the World Wildlife Fund, as well as some of the sponsors of the Tortugas Marinas and Caribbean Conservation. And you can follow the movements of the turtles online by going to panda.org. And there you can literally tap into each one of the individual turtles and follow what's going on with them. It's absolutely fascinating. For people who wish to learn more, and as well, you know, really we have to bring this out to a much larger realm, where do you think the most important areas for people to focus in terms of making differences are?
People can contribute to the conservation of marine turtles in various ways. One is, of course, your behavior anytime you go to the beach, how you dispose of the garbage, because plastic bags that end up in the world's oceans are causing some mortality to the leatherbacks because they confound them with jellyfish, and that causes, of course, a lethal obstruction of the in the stomach area and can kill them. But there are other ways to contribute. Traveling to places where leatherbacks are nesting and where communities have decided to protect them is adding to the value of the live turtle, the turtle alive. Any expenses in accommodation, in food and transportation at these local sites where marine turtle conservation is happening is key for society to learn about the economic and socioeconomic positive impact that having marine turtles around can mean. So I think these are two ways. Of course, people can also look for conservation organizations. There are national conservation organizations in the United States, in Florida. There are groups that are extremely active, and they need financial support. So that's just one more way to contribute to marine turtles. And we're now starting to explore how, from the consumer end of things, when people make their choices as to what fish they should buy, we hope that we will have a system in place in the future where people can buy turtle-friendly tuna, for example, or turtle-friendly mahi-mahi in the supermarkets, that will ensure that the fleets that are fishing that particular tuna or mahi-mahi are making all efforts that we know are possible to do today to reduce bycatch mortality.
Sort of like in the wood industry, we have the FSC certification that says that the wood is not impacting tropical rainforests.
Sure. The Marine Stewardship Council, which is the marine equivalent of the FSC, the MSC certification, is already a system in place. It's only that most of the fisheries that have an impact on sea turtles have not been as yet certified, and they face additional challenges, not just the reduction of mortality in turtles per se, but also the implementation of quotas, management systems, etc. So we have a big challenge ahead, but we see where the tunnel is leading us, and we can start to see the line at the end.
Dr. Carlos Drews, who is the regional coordinator for the marine turtle conservation in Latin America and the Caribbean, is working with the World Wildlife Fund. Now let's expand this out and go a little bit personal, because there are some people who would say, and I'm sure you hear this once in a while, and who cares about these things? Why is this important? I mean, there's so many animals. You're catching 50,000 a year in the nets. That means there must be a lot of them out there. Tell us why this is important from your perspective.
Yes. Well, marine turtles are all endangered, and some worms, nematodes, or small plant species are also in danger. So the question is quite legitimate. Why bother so much about marine turtles? What is different? Well, marine turtles are storytellers. I think that's my personal take on the turtles and why the turtles is because they have, of course, a right on their own to be part of the world's biodiversity, and if we're responsible and if we are the custodians of that biodiversity, we have to do something about turtles. But turtles tell us a story about the relationship between society and the oceans. If you think of the time when Columbus was roaming the waters of the Caribbean, when they got close to the shore or in the Bay of Havana in Cuba, they were hitting turtles permanently with their vessels. It was a thump that was hitting the vessel permanently because there were just thousands of them close to the nesting sites. If we ever see the turtles recover to the numbers that used to be around here 500 years ago, we will have solved most of the problems that have to do with society's relation with the oceans. We will have addressed the sustainability of fisheries, the selectivity of fisheries. We will have addressed coastal development, the tourism industry, for example, and how it can impact nesting sites will have been taken care of. We will have addressed the need to conserve the coral reefs because that's where the food of the hawksbill turtle is found mainly. So if there are hawksbill turtles in abundance, we will have healthy coral reefs for sure. So I think the marine turtle is a very powerful vehicle for ocean and marine coastal conservation in general. It's also very powerful for communication purposes. As you have seen, I mean, people do get attracted to the turtle, and now through the website they can see the movements in the Atlantic Ocean. People just think that turtles are a charismatic species. They are innocent creatures. I look at them as an animal that has been doing going about its business for 100 million years in a kind of innocent way. They are not fierce predators or anything. And all of this kind of appeals to the public. How can these animals go extinct in front of our eyes if they are doing no harm to anyone? I think it's of course a simplistic way of looking at it, but they have such great appeal. And communications is a powerful strategy to raise awareness, not only at an individual level, but also at the level of governments. I do hope that when government officials learn about our project and about this incredible shared responsibility that comes out of these tracks that the turtles draw across the Atlantic Ocean, we will be in a much better position to reach policy that will bring the turtles back to where they were at Columbus times.
Well, your project is one of many, many, many significant efforts to try to keep these oceans alive. I'd like to get your perspective on what you feel in the larger spectrum is going to be required to bring our oceans back, because at this point, all indications are that they're being severely impacted in ways that most people aren't aware of.
Yes. Perhaps the main impact on the world's oceans has happened with the advent of industrial international fisheries. We are now really in a position to take incredible numbers of fish. Also, the problem is that the gear for fishing is not selective. So the bycatch, anything that you catch that you did not intend to catch, is for some of the fisheries a ratio of 1 to 10. That's to say, for 1 kilogram of shrimp, you throw away 9 kilograms of anything else, fish and other sea creatures. And that discard is just unbearable. That will never be sustainable for the world's oceans. So I envision that the world's fisheries will become more and more selective, that we will have better systems in place to ensure that the take is not harmful to the population as a whole. That means that the fisheries are sustainable, that we do not use gear that destroys the ocean floors as it is dragged over the seamounts where some of the most unique ocean creatures are abundant. And in that way, perhaps, we may be able to preserve the ecosystem as a whole. So when we say ecosystem as a whole, if that's what we want to preserve, our approach to fisheries should be ecosystem-based and not just the species that is fished and make quotas and take for that particular species, but also think of the impact that that fishery is having on the whole network, the feeding network, and the whole ocean community. And that's a big challenge. But scientists are helping. We now have much better models of ecosystem-based fisheries, and some of the fisheries in Latin America are receptive to this new approach, ecosystem-based.
For people who wish to assist in that larger process, what would you recommend?
When people learn about the impact that the fisheries have on the product that you have on your plate, I think from a consumer end, we will be in a much better position to exert pressure on those practices that are definitely detrimental to the ecosystem. So we are urging the public to learn more about the implications of eating that particular choice of yours from the marine environment for your lunch, and then make choices. Consumer choices are the biggest power in the world's markets at the moment, and we firmly believe that an informed public can make a difference.
Well, that's exactly what we've tried to do during these two segments on the Wild Side News. Dr. Carlos Drews, I want to thank you so much for adding your voice to the Voice of the Earth here on the Wild Side News.
It was my pleasure, and I do look forward to provide additional information that the public may have. They can write to me. There is a link at our website at panda.org. If people have any questions, we are all yours.
Thank you so much.
The signs are everywhere. We are dramatically changing life on planet Earth. And planet Earth is dramatically changing our life on Earth. Do we need to call a truce? Can we? When we return, it's over to the nation's capital where a lot of people are getting together to forge a beginning. When your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.